everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Roundtable. My name is Josh Turner. I'm your host. Some people call me Wolf, and this is my show. We're going to be talking about a few different things tonight with our guest, and but before I introduce her and we get started, I wanted to give you guys a rundown of a few things. First of all, the email address is joshturner@prtpodcast.com, joshturner@prtpodcast.com. You can send me an email and we can talk about your encounters, and I can tell them, or you can come on the show and tell them. Now, you can tell them there's two different ways. You can do a Friday recording podcast, which is what this is, or you can come on my live stream on Tuesdays. I have a live stream on YouTube. That's a YouTube exclusive. We start usually about 8 o'clock and we can go 2 to 4 hours. It just depends. And there's a ton of content on there. So if all you're listening to is the podcast, the Friday podcast, and that's what this is, and that's all you're listening to, you're missing out. There's like 60, 70 episodes are on there on right at this point on YouTube. I am involved in a lot of different groups involving the paranormal. The most prominent group that I'm involved in is my own, which is Paranormal Roundtable Group on Facebook, and I am an admin in a multitude of other groups, including Dogman Werewolf Discussion Group, which is Phil Stern and Della Carter, Paranormal Lounge, which belongs to Nelly, which is my wife, and then North American Dogman Project Region 2, which is D.A. Roberts, who's a great author, by the way. Wolf Turner PRT fan page, that was created by Phil Stern, and it's mostly just him and Chris Clough and Curtis Turner, I guess, making fun of me with memes. It's kind of what they want to do. Quad Coalition of Sciences, which is Nick Valente's group, and the Paranormal Roundtable Prayer Group, which is Nelly. Paranormal Encounters, which is Mushu, my co-host. And then A Whisper to a Scream, and that's Ryan Tremblay. And then Paranormal Trucker Podcast, which is John King. Those I am admins in, and I am good friends with many people in this field who also have shows and groups and whatnot. And so, yada, yada, yada. We are doing a conference, too. I need to tell people. We still have tickets. VIP are pretty much sold out, but you can still get a general admission ticket to go to the conference. Now, the link will be all over the it's all over the place. It's on the Tuesday live stream. It's on my Facebook. It's on the Paranormal Roundtable Group Facebook. It's on every Facebook everywhere. It's pretty much everywhere you look, and you can find it. It's on Eventbrite. Just go to Eventbrite, and it's Paranormal Roundtable Presents Dogman Cryptid Conference. So just look that up, and you can buy a ticket, and it is in Paris, Tennessee on the 12th and the 13th. The 13th is for general admission, and the 12th, if you have a VIP ticket, you already know, you get to have a special dinner with me and the guests that are going to be speaking there. The guests are Ken Gerhard, Nick Redfern, Louise Barton Nunley, Nick Valente, Jody Cook, Bettina Moss, goes on and on and on. Steve Stockton, it's Josh Ninocchio, Tony Merkel, just Ron Murphy, bunch of people, a lot of people that are going to be there. And it's going to be a who's who of the cryptid world. And if you're not involved and you're not going, you know, you're missing out. And people's like, well, I'll try to catch it next year. I don't know that there's going to be a next year. This may be a one-time thing. This already was a big undertaking for me. As busy as I am, it's been kind of a stress, and I'll be glad to do it, but I'll also be glad when it's over, because I have a lot going on in my life. Okay. And getting two shows out a week is hectic enough, but trying to run a business on top of that, that's a whole nother thing. Another thing I want to talk about is, if you do want to be a friend of mine on Facebook or Instagram, please let me know. My name is Josh Turner 940 on Instagram, Josh Turner 940. Just send me a request, but let me know that you're also a listener of the show, so I can approve your friend requests. Facebook in particular, people send me friend requests every day, and I don't know you, but I need to know that you do listen to the show. Because some people will send me random friend requests, and they have not the first clue of what PRT is, which is Paranormal Roundtable, and they have no idea that's even what it stands for. And I'm like, okay, well, we really can't be friends, because I get that we have a lot of mutuals and that you're involved in the ghost community, UFO community, Bigfoot community, crypto community, whatever. But I don't know you, dude. So just drop me a line, say, hey, you know, I'm, you know, fan of the show, whatever, listen to the show, and I can approve you. So all that being said, we do have a show tonight, like I said, and we're going to get started. Check out the live stream on Tuesday. If you're not listening to the live stream on Tuesday on YouTube, you're missing out. Like I said, you just got to check it out. Try to make it to the conference if you can. One of the people that I'm going to talk to from the conference is on the show tonight. Anne, do you want to introduce yourself?
Thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here. Yeah, I am Lady Anne, the podcast hostess of the Caravan Library of Lore, owner of KPNL Radio, and a new author of Aperture in the Veil, Born in a Preternatural World.
Yeah, and for those of you who probably know, you might not know, but she was on our live stream on YouTube. Now, I just want to clear the air with that before we get started. Anne had come on the show, and that would be a couple weeks ago, okay, as of this recording. But when she came on the show, I did not do my due diligence. I had not read her book in its entirety, and that's something you should do before you bring somebody on the show. And I actually thought that we were going to be talking about one subject, and the interview took a turn, and we talked about a bunch of other stuff. And so we were like, hey, we need to record for the podcast where you can actually come on the show and talk about what we were originally supposed to talk about. But that a lot of people told me that was a great interview, and it was, they enjoyed hearing what was said, whatever. But anyways, tonight, I want you, Anne, to talk about your experiences, because that's what your book is about. It's not about the subject that we were talking about, which was vampires, which is something you do know about, and we can talk about that too if you want, but we don't have to talk about it like we did on the live stream. The live stream just went kind of off the rails because we didn't really, and I don't script the live stream. I just kind of shoot from the hip, and I talk, and I say, hey, we're going to do this. But it turned into something completely different than what I had planned and what you had planned. And so tonight we're going to try to make up for that. We're going to talk about your experiences because that's what your book is about, right?
Right. It is. Yeah. Yes. I have had experiences since my earliest memories, and I decided I didn't right off the bat decide that I wanted to write a book about it that I was actually going to publish. Originally, it was just something that I was writing down because I had so much that was going on in my life and so many different experiences. And my grandfather, he ended up with dementia. And, you know, that really hits you. And you think about your children, and I really wanted to just try to write everything down in case they ever went through anything, in case anything ever happened to me, they'd have something left behind. And they would also know that they're not alone when it comes to experiencing things in the supernatural paranormal realm. So I actually had, I would say, a quarter to half of the book written. And then something just kind of told me, submit it. Just see. See what a publisher would think of this. Because, you know, of course, ever since I was 6 years old, I had always wanted to become an author. So I did, and they loved it. And I was shocked. And here we are. I was able to publish it, and it's been incredible.
Explain the title, because the title is very interesting.
Yeah, so basically, in my belief, when we come into this life, we are born into what is known as the Great Forgetting. And basically, we pass through the veil, and we're reincarnated, and we forget, you know, our past lives and all of that. But what would happen if there was an opening in the veil? Now, I use the word aperture in the veil instead of opening, because aperture was something that with cameras and photography, kind of an ode to my parents, because both my mother and my father were really into photography. So that's where we get aperture in the veil. Now, born in a preternatural world, preternatural, see, I chose that one because you've got supernatural and you've got paranormal. And I feel that those kind of signify that the things that we experience aren't that normal, that they're really rare and they're not from here. But in my belief, here again, everything that we're experiencing is very much a real part of our world here. You know, and then of course, I love everything old fashioned, Victorian era, and they are kind of the older words. So yeah, that's the story behind the title.
So when you wrote the book, the Aperture in the Veil, mm-hmm. this book that you've written, it is like basically an A to Z of all your experiences from when you were your earliest memory. Now, mm-hmm. your earliest memory being how old?
So I was about a year old with my very earliest memory. My father had taken me over to the babysitter. So he actually had just gained custody of me when I was about a year old. So he had to go to work and he had found this babysitter and he goes in. And I remember he sat me in front of this big, beautiful picture window. And, you know, the sun was rising and the farm fields down below were flooded. And there was just those gorgeous pink and orange and yellow colors. And as I was looking at this, I remember thinking, and I remember it like it was yesterday, wow, I came back. So that's always stayed with me. And then from there, I'm not sure how old I was. I know that I was still in the crib because I remember looking through the slats in my crib and looking down the hallway and I could see these shadow entities. So they were, you know, human shaped. Some of them were, you could see this shadow hand kind of reach around the hallway. So you saw like the hand, or they were the cloaked figures, but they never came into my room. They always stayed in the darkness in the hallway.
And so, I mean, did you see these shadow entities like you've seen them your entire life?
I have. And something that was really interesting, it wasn't until I was about 13 years old that I went and so my sister and I, we share the same mom, but different dads. Mm-hmm. So she was raised by our grandmother on my mom's side, and I was raised by my dad. And we live 4 hours apart, so we didn't grow up together. But we did maintain a really good relationship. Well, when I was 13, I went to visit her, and she confided in me. She goes, okay, I don't know what you're going to think about this. This is kind of weird, but I saw something that looked like this next to my bed. And she described the exact same style of shadow entity that I had been seeing in my hallway all through growing up in that house.
Hmm. And can you give us a description?
Oh, sorry. yeah, it's, I mean, basically think of a monk. You know, he's standing there. He's got this cloak on, but there's no face. It's just a shadow with that outline.
So you saw what looked like a monk, like with the hat, with the hood on. I mean, with,
yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Hooded cloak.
Like a
figure.
Hooded cloak. Okay. All right.
Yes.
All right. So, and you don't know exactly what age you started seeing this.
No, because I know that I could see, I saw them starting at, you know, looking through my crib. So I can't remember when my dad finally took the crib down, maybe when I was 2 or 3. I'm not sure, but it was early.
And you started having memories at a very early age.
Yes.
Let's back up for a second. You said that you believe when you're born that you go through this great forgetting, which I actually agree with. I actually mm-hmm. do believe that. A lot of people know that I am a follower of Christ, but I also believe we reincarnate. Now, a lot of people don't understand that because it doesn't go along with the KJV, the King James Version of the Bible, which a lot of people accept to be the gospel truth, which I personally, I have mixed feelings about it. I believe it has a lot of truth. but I think it's missing a lot. I think it's a partial book, actually, because there's a lot of other books that are not in there that do belong in there. And I do believe that we do come back. I do believe that's a big part of why Christ came, because I believe that we're in a time period known as the Kali Yuga. That's what the Indian people would call it from India, the Hindus. What that has to do with Christianity, people are like, well, what does that have to do with Christianity? I'll explain it really quickly. They have a central figure in their belief named Krishna. Okay. Krishna is going to return and basically do the same thing that Christ, it's like Krishna, Christ, very similar. And so when people discount other people's beliefs just out of hand because it doesn't jibe with one particular book that they want to believe in, they just tend to throw the baby out with the bathwater. And I think that's the problem with religion inherently. With religion, that people adhere to a religion, even when when there's facts that you know don't jibe with what they believe, and people will hang on to, well, I feel this, you know, this is faith. I have this faith, and I feel this. And that's great to have good feelings about something or whatever. But a lot of times, just having a faith and a feeling is not enough. You need to have the actual word. And I do believe that people have used the actual word of God for a long time to their own agenda. That's just a fact. And one of the things I think that was left out and should be in there is the Book of Enoch. And that's another thing that's not in the Bible. That's one of the most glaringly obvious. And we were talking before the show also, and briefly we were talking and we talked about Solomon, like the Song of Solomon, Key of Solomon. Because we were talking about the vampire Ornius. And I was explaining to you the story of Ornius and how that all came to be. This is why, folks, there is so much knowledge out there that is left out. And there is so much knowledge. In fact, I was watching a show the other day. It's that vampire show called What We Do in the Shadows. And there was this vampire they were jokingly saying that they were responsible for the burning of the Library of Alexandria. Because according to the show, you know, it's the tongue-in-cheek jokey, it's whatever. But vampires are evil, so it's like, yeah, this vampire destroyed all this knowledge. You know, and they thought it was funny or whatever. But I've looked at that as a central, like a disaster in our history. Because we do live a limited number of days, and then we come back with amnesia of a past life. Typically, not everybody, but typically we do. Now, children will have memories of a past life, but I think that knowledge was stored there, passed down from generations, and you know that we don't have access to. So we have to start over every time. You know, to try to, and I believe we keep doing it till we get it right. And then you go to where you're going to go. And eventually, I think if you're evil enough and you're not going to change, you go to where you belong. And if you're righteous, you go to where you belong. But a lot of people think that, well, if you're a bad guy, that's it. You just die, you go to hell. That's all there is to it. Well, no, because God uses sinners to do righteousness. And I can tell you that with all certainty. But you know, when you die, you start over. If you have to come back and do it and learn the lessons you didn't learn the first time, I really believe that that's how it works. I really do. And people are just so, you know, vehemently against that view, and that's fine. That's what they feel in their heart. But that's really what they're doing is they're like, oh, I feel this, that it's not correct. So, well, I feel the opposite. I feel that it is correct. So just wanted to throw that out there. You know, there's going to be people who are just going to be like, oh, I'm not going to listen just because it doesn't jibe with what they've been taught since they were kids from the King James Version of the Bible and probably the Scofield Version, which is even worse. But, you know, I'm just there's so much knowledge that's not there. Now, when you wrote this, your book, okay, were you looking at it like, okay, I want to explore – who I am and why I am, and was it? Did you really go that deep with it, or were you just like, hey, you know what? I'm gonna write a book about all the experiences I've had because I am an experiencer because they do exist, and that's what you are.
Right. Well, actually, you know, like I said in the beginning, it was really for my children. It was something to leave behind for them. However, after I was approved to have it published, it really kind of lit that fire to, like, you know, just get more serious about it. And as I really thought about it, and I really moved forward, something very interesting happened. There is one chapter with the title Trisha, and she was she ran the healing group that I was a part of when I was 15. Well, I hadn't talked to her in probably, I'll call it 4 years. I think it had been 4 years. Well, I type her name down for the title of this next chapter. And I get a ping on Facebook, and it was her. And that wasn't the only thing that happened that was similar to that. I would write down people's names, and then all of a sudden I'd get either a phone call or something, and it was just really strange. And so I felt like as I was writing the book, I was also healing a lot of things that I had went through. So it's definitely transformational as I wrote it.
So you felt like, okay, let me take that in. So you felt like you were changed. It was writing the book changed you.
Yeah, I think that, yes, because for instance, in the beginning, I talk about the car wreck that I was in. And as I was writing it down, I realized I never processed that. I never thought about it. I hadn't healed that yet. And when you're writing, see, I can tell you the stories, but when you're writing it, it's every single little detail because you really want to pull the reader in. You want to do that theater of the mind, and you're really essentially reliving every single step of that story as you're writing it out. And it definitely caused it to take a little bit longer to write than I had expected. I had to walk away several times during different stories. One of them was the car wreck that I had mentioned in the beginning. And the reason I wrote about that was because when we were going down the road, I just had this vision in my head from this movie that I had watched. It was called Fly Away Home. And in the beginning of the movie, this child is in a car wreck with her mother, but her mother didn't make it. And then she, you know, goes off to live with an uncle or something like that. But I remember thinking, why am I thinking about this? I don't want to think about that. And then all of a sudden I heard this really loud, it sounded like a gunshot. And then the next thing I know, everything goes black. So we were in a Ford Ranger and the tire had, the tread came off, it popped. And the truck rolled twice. Had my dad not reached over and, you know, he laid me down and he laid on top of me. And I don't know if he would even still be here because the whole roof over where his head would have been was, you know, caved in and it was really bad. So I hadn't really thought about that and I hadn't processed that for so many years. So writing that out helped do that. Same with the last story of the book, which was about a Sasquatch encounter. That was the story that stood between actually getting this published and not. Because it even took me a while to not even cry on air when I told the story, because it was so intense.
If you don't mind me asking, can you talk about that?
The Sasquatch encounter? Yeah. Yes, I can.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So I flew over to Ohio and I was hanging out with some friends and we were doing a ghost investigation. This was the second time that I had been there. The first time it was really fun because we had went on a ghost hunt to the infirmary that was there. And, you know, so I thought, okay, you know, it was no big deal. It wasn't anything that was super scary. It was my first actual official ghost hunt that I had ever been on. And, you know, I was one of those people where everybody was getting ready and they were putting their equipment down and I really didn't have too much to do. And I saw somebody, I said, well, can I go adventure? And they were like, sure. So I wandered off into this building by myself. And I found myself in the basement where I did have an encounter. It caught me off guard so much because as I was standing in the basement, I was trying to hum and sing songs because it was lightening the energy of the, you know, the moment, and it was making me feel better. Well, all of a sudden I felt this hand, like, as real as you and I, this hand goes up the back of my head into my hair, like the fingers were in my hair. And it sent me running. I ran all the way back to the top, you know, and here I am huffing and puffing, white as a sheet. I'm staring at everybody. And one of them was like, you wandered off, didn't you? And I was like, yeah, yes, I did. But, you know, after I collected myself, I thought, well, what are the odds of that ever happening again? Truly, it's going to be pretty low, is what I was thinking. So I wandered off again, but I didn't wander down into the basement. I wandered off into a different section of the floor that we were on. And nothing like that did happen again. So, you know, that experience kind of gave me some, I don't know, bravery, if you will. So on my second trip, you know, we're doing another ghost investigation and we decided to do the Estes method. So that is where you have your spirit box and you have your noise canceling headphones and then you have a blindfold. So you have somebody all hooked up to this and they're listening as the stations, you know, are going by really fast on the ghost box and they call out whatever words that they hear. So as we are just kind of asking questions, seeing if there's something there, we're getting a lot of connection to the land. They're talking about the woods. It's talking about whatever this is. It's talking about the woods and the land and just the past. So we couldn't really get a whole lot of information. And so that kind of gave me the idea, all right, well, maybe we need to go into the woods and do this. That's what I was thinking. So later on, this is like a day later, we pack up all of our gear and we go out into the woods and we get everything set up. Well, I'm sitting there on this blanket. All the equipment is set up around us. And I hear what sounds like bipedal footsteps. But nobody else has a reaction. And so I think, okay, it's maybe just a bird. It's you know, no big deal. So I just kind of sit there trying to ignore it. Because when we had went into the woods, because I'm sensitive, they had asked me, hey, Anne, how are you feeling? And I said, oh, you know, I'm feeling great. Nothing felt off at the time. Well, one thing that I didn't take notice of that I probably should have is here in the Pacific Northwest, the forest is very quiet. Well, over there, when we had walked into the woods, it was, again, really silent. And I should have registered that because over there it's an orchestra. I mean, with the cicadas and the crickets, it was amazing. Well, so here I am. I'm trying not to be afraid. I'm thinking, okay, it's just an animal. And that is when I hear this really low guttural growl. And I'm telling you, it made me sick. I could feel it like deep within me. And again, I'm froze. And I say nothing because there again, nobody else is having a reaction. So I finally decide, okay, I'm just going to stand up and I grab a flashlight. And I stand up and I turn around because now I don't want my back to that area anymore. And I'm holding the flashlight and I'm looking around, and I point it towards the entrance of which we came. There's a tree over there, just out of reach of the flashlight. And you can see the silhouette. I mean, it's head, shoulder, arm standing there next to the tree, the arm kind of like around the tree. And I'm frozen and I'm just sitting there like, I am not out here for you. This is not a part of my reality. I want nothing to do with this. We came out here because of ghosts, not Sasquatch. And so I take my flashlight off of it and I'm looking around. And as soon as I take the flashlight off of the silhouette, we all hear this really loud, open-handed slap on the side of the vehicle that we drove in on. And I just stood there. I just stood there. And I definitely felt like I was in something's territory that I shouldn't be there. And eventually they said, are you okay? And I went to shake my head yes, because I wanted to be brave. But then I quickly was like, no, I'm not. We need to go out to the field. I can't do this. I've got to go. I've got to go right now. And so they're like, oh, okay. All right, we'll go, you know. So we go and we pack everything up. We get in the vehicle, we drive out, and we don't drive out too far. So now we're out in the field that's surrounding this. And that's when my friend decides to pull up the 1994 Ohio Howl recording. And I'm telling you, the sound from that recording came out of the woods right where we were, and it was so loud. I mean, I'm sure that I looked like a cartoon where I just, you know, where they'd go completely white because I'm standing there and I'm like, monsters really do exist. In that moment, I was done. I was like, I don't ever need to search. I don't ever need to anything, because this is real. And all of a sudden you hear this. It's like it ripped out a tree from the ground and smashes it against another tree. And at that point, I'm just like, go, 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 you know, get in the vehicle and just get out of there. And so we went back and you just kind of had some time to try to gather my thoughts, you know, and breathe, because I was just shocked. It, like I said, it was nothing that I ever wanted to experience. It was nothing that I ever went out trying to look for, but it happened. Well, from being in this community as long as I have, I know that there are multiple different camps on beliefs of Sasquatch. So you have one camp that believes that they can cloak and ride around with aliens, and then you have the other camp that's like, no, it's just a regular thing like the great panda. So I thought, okay, I want to try something. And I went out, we were outside, and we hooked up the my friend on the Estes method again, and I thought, process of elimination, let's see if we can communicate with it through the spirit box. So as we're sitting there, you could hear footsteps around us. It was like they came or followed us back to base camp. And we had taken the flashlight. One of the members of the party took the flashlight. And then all of a sudden the person on the Estes method said, bright, too bright. And so we turned the flashlight off. Well, there was a ridge that had a tree on it, and you could see the moonlight and the tree branches and everything. And there again was the silhouette of the same Sasquatch looking thing that was in the woods. And I wasn't the only one that saw it either. And you could see it kind of slowly go back and forth. And then all of a sudden the person on the Estes method said, see? You see me. From there, it began, the spirit box, what she was relaying was, it talked about how something about being disconnected, how they were once worshipped, but now they're a myth. And just this disconnection between people and the land. However, there was a change that happened. And it was really strange because there was this presence of almost like this trickster type of an entity that kind of, you could tell like it took over, and then these beings, the Sasquatch, whatever you want to call them, they went away. And then this being was there, and he was like taunting us, and he was saying certain things that made us go, okay, we're done. We're done. We're cutting this session off, and we were done with the investigation. And that's it.
So you saw this, you saw a Bigfoot, what you think is a Bigfoot?
The silhouette of one. Silhouette. Yeah.
How tall?
I would say it had to have been, it had to have been 9-10 feet.
Jeez. And then later you did a spirit box session?
Yes.
And you channeled that entity?
We believe so, yes, because, you know, us witnessing the silhouette and then the person on the spirit box who wasn't even facing that, and they were blindfolded, they were like, see, you see me. And it was right when we saw the silhouette.
God, that's so weird. Okay, so because so many people, like, there's such an argument, and mm-hmm. for the audience, for the record, for the audience, we have a lot of the same friends. we do. I mean, we have three or four in common that are, you know, and they're all pretty big names in this field too. Mm-hmm. That's not bragging. I'm just saying that we're pretty good friends with these people, but they don't all agree. They don't all agree on the same what this mm-hmm. thing is. But what you just said is a big deal, because a lot of people, they'll argue with me vehemently. I've been cussed out, even threatened.
Really?
Oh, man. Oh, my gosh. Believe me. Trust me. Threatened. You know, wow. like, you know, over what the nature of this creature is. Bigfoot. I'm talking about Bigfoot specifically, but Dogman, right. too. Like, when it comes to Dogman, wow. Haven't really had anybody say anything about Mothman or anything like that. I did have somebody come at me about the reptilian thing and told me to be quiet. And I asked them if they were one, jokingly, and they said yes.
Oh, wow.
And so I was like, well, you wouldn't be the first one I've dealt with. If anybody goes back in the archives of my show, they know that I've actually had my own, what I believe was an encounter with me and several of my friends had an encounter with one of those creatures. Somebody that might have been a hybrid, I think, actually. I mean, it just sounds so weird, but go back in the show and you'll. But like what you said, though, like, okay, so you guys really believed that you had a, like, you communicated with this thing. And so,
right.
So that would put it, like, what you saw anyway, would put it clearly in the category of being an ethereal, like a non-corporeal being, metaphysical, maybe something that can manifest itself as physical.
Right.
I mean, you know, but it technically is metaphysical, and it really bothered you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. I mean, because here's the other thing. Okay. Here's another thought, though. Could there be something out there that is okay? So let's say that Sasquatch is a regular animal like the panda. Okay. Mm-hmm. For this idea.
Yeah.
But let's say there's something else out there that can shapeshift, and it can take the form of these things, and it's intelligent enough to know how we view them. So could there be two things out there where one is a shapeshifter parading as a Sasquatch, and then you have Sasquatch that, because, you know, you have the two different camps on the beliefs of them. What if it's both? And what if there is something out there that's shapeshifting? I mean, I don't know. This was never my field.
Yeah. Let's back up for a second. Okay. So what you're saying, though, has been told to me. One of my friends is Native American. His grandfather told me point blank that there is Bigfoot And there is a werewolf type creature that is a skinwalker. And then there is a dog man that's a race of beings that came from another place. He didn't really specify, and that they live underground. Okay. Now, this is what one man told me. Okay. But he told me that this was generation after generation of passed down information. And basically, it just boils down to there is a trickster that actually can become any of those. And according to him, really? There are skinwalker legends. He's a Ute, by the way. And he said that there are skinwalkers that can take the form of any living animal, but it's always perverted. So when they try to turn into one of these creatures, it turns into this hideous thing. Now, if Bigfoot is a natural entity, then this thing, I guess, hypothetically, they could turn into one of those. Like even like, right. Okay. So let's point out, for example, our friend Ken Gerhardt. He is what is considered to be an aper when it comes to Bigfoot, but he's in the metaphysical camp when it comes to dogma. It's complicated. But anyway, those are his views, and I can put them out there because he makes no bones about it. He's like, that's what I believe. Now, let's say that the Bigfoot is real flesh and blood creature. There is a shapeshifter spirit, okay, that a lot of native cultures believe in. And I don't mean just in America. I mean, I'm talking like, you know, just it's very common. Mesoamericans in general, South America, Mexico, there's these legends here in the United States, legends in Africa, the shamans in Africa. I've talked to one that was from what was now Zimbabwe, used to be Rhodesia. And he explained to me about the leopard men.
Yeah,
and they claim that they try to transform in, not him, but they transform into any living creature. So they pick an animal based on their traits of what they need for the moment, but they don't fully complete the transformation. There's something that's off about it. Mm. So there could be a spirit that actually masquerades, and there could be a physical being, a human, that does it too. See, that even muddies the water even further.
Yes, it does. And
it gets really convoluted. Yeah, you don't know what you're dealing with. Like I told my friend Luke, he's always going deep sea fishing and everything. And he was out there last summer, and he caught a huge, huge shark. And I told him, I said, it wasn't a record breaker or anything, but it was a hammerhead. And I said, what were you fishing for, Luke? He said, I was fishing for marlin. I said, yeah. And you caught a shark. Because when you go deep sea fishing, you don't know what you're going to catch. And when you play with Ouija boards or any of this other stuff that we're not really 100% sure on how it works, you know, you're opening portals and doors to things you don't know what they could be. It could be anything. And also, what you saw could have been a flesh and blood Bigfoot, and then you could have had an evil spirit or a trickster spirit just pretending to be that so they could say, hey, or it could have been that creature telling you this and telling you that, and it could have been lying too.
Mm-hmm.
They could have just been I care about the earth and blah, 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 you know, because the Nephilim, everybody knows the story of the Nephilim, that they were part angelic and that they bred with human women, and then it becomes, you know, and it just goes down the rabbit hole. But what I would like to propose is one of the things that Carl Sagan once said. Now, I'm not the huge Carl Sagan fan, but he had his moments. But he said that when we search for intelligent life, we should not only look for intelligent life as we know it, but we should look for intelligent life as we don't even understand it. You know, like there's life out there that we may not even grasp how it works. We can't even comprehend it. But when you shut it off and say, well, we're just going to look for life as we know it, the way we can comprehend it, well, you're turning yourself off to a whole lot of stuff. Because, I mean, there are these tube worms that can live in, like, you know, a 1,000-degree temperature, you know, the ocean floor near these ocean vents that are open to volcanoes. And it's amazing to science that they can flourish there. There's bacteria that can flourish under the most harshest of conditions. Typically, you know, land-based bacteria, and I'll explain how this all makes, I'll bring it all together here. Bacteria is, if you just salt, like if you pickle food and you use salt and vinegar, typically that will kill or keep viruses and molds and things and bacteria from getting into your food. The old timers they knew that. So they would pick apricots in the summer, what they couldn't eat. They would pickle it. They would store it as preserves. Then they would preserve it, you know, through salt and different, you know, whatever. They did this with cucumbers, which are obviously pickles themselves, and then the word pickled comes from that. And then they would make all these different types of food that was preserved from bacteria. But we know that there are bacteria that can thrive in salt. That salt doesn't stop all of it, doesn't kill it all, because there are tons of bacteria that live in the ocean, and they thrive in salt water. And you can get really sick eating seafood, you know, and because of the nasty bacteria that live in the salt water. And so there isn't really one magic bullet for this, you know what I mean? Life can be a multitude of things, and this is what I'm getting at. There are tons and tons of different life forms that can live in extreme conditions that we could not possibly comprehend. And so life is just so resilient. You know what I mean? And then when you start getting into, you know, well, that can't be because this creature would have to be impervious to the cold. Well, yeah, it is. You know, I mean, I read a story about this giant octopus type creature that attacked a Russian team of scientists. Some people say it's a myth. Some people say it's absolutely true. But it was under a freshwater lake that they uncovered in Antarctica that had been closed off for 24 million years. And they opened it up like 8 miles down into the earth, and that creature lived there, and they unleashed it. And it was an octopus type creature, was obviously the alpha predator in that lake. And it went about the business of trying to kill all of these scientists. Sounds like something out of science fiction, but that you can look this up. There's a story about it. I was going to do a show with a friend of mine about it. But it just shows you that life, though, it can live in the harshest of conditions, and there's no way to say, hey, this does not exist because we can't understand it or we don't, you know. That's the biggest trap that humans fall into, is trying to comprehend with their human physical brain. When right. I always tell people to look into the spirit to find what you need, because you can, and use discernment, you know. Prayer, and you know, and that obviously that's what I do, to try to come to conclusions and answers, to try to find, you know, because when you're looking at these things, you're trying to analyze it, and it's just like, well, that just doesn't make sense. Well, a lot of things don't make sense, but I still believe they exist, you know. And I know that's a long-winded runabout there, but I just wanted to explain to the listeners, you know, what you were dealing with could have been a number of things, could have been a multitude of things. Right. And there's no way to really know. Now, going Occam's razor here, let's just say, for argument's sake, it was a metaphysical Bigfoot creature and you talked to it on the spirit box. Mm-hmm. The question, though, is that what you feel happened?
Oh, my gosh. You know, It left me with a lot more questions than answers. I didn't feel that it was anything definitive. That night when that question came up in my mind, was it really Sasquatch, or was it something else that shapeshifted? It was just so hard because, you know, you can see things. And you can say, oh, it's just my mind. It's just my mind playing tricks on me, and I'm seeing shadows. And you can try to, shluff it off. But this, for it to be so physical, and to have other people with me, and to hear the tree, I really don't know. I feel like it's this weird mixture of both. That there was some Sasquatch there, but like an actual physical creature, but then there was also this trickster thing. So at what point was it actual Sasquatch, and then what point was it this thing shapeshifting into it?
And that's saying that you would be in the camp of this thing actually being flesh and blood, and then something was imitating it.
Right.
Okay. So if you had to pick, okay, which I guess we've kind of explained, yeah, that's your, then, yeah. Okay, so then you would be saying that this thing is actually a They were two different things.
Right.
Okay. Because it would seem fitting for you to see this entity, or Sasquatch, whatever, and then it begins mm-hmm. to tell you all this stuff, you know. But yeah, if you think it's two different things that was going on simultaneously, then yeah, I mean, I believe you.
Yeah, for sure.
And so that encounter, before we go any further, let me ask you this. What are your thoughts on, okay, like when you saw the Sasquatch, mm-hmm. you talked about how can you tell me the fear? Like what you felt, because mm-hmm. you said how afraid it made you that you were having a hard time even talking about it.
Right. Well, it's one of those things where it doesn't matter how many experiences I have. When you have something so physical, so real as me talking to you right now, it's jarring. You know, and this kind of, if I may, ties into another story.
Sure.
Well, you know, here I am. I've had all of these experiences, and even back in February of this year, I remember I had my toolbox. I have this little toolbox, and it was on the second shelf above my dryer. Well, one night we're going to bed and this thing just flies off the shelf and hits the dryer. Now, it was secure because it's heavy and I didn't want it to ever fall on me. And so I knew that it was, you know, it was good. But one night something just decided to throw it on the dryer. Well, I wasn't scared. I was just kind of like, not tonight. And I went in there and I took it and I put it on the floor and I was just done and I went to bed. So it takes something pretty big to really rattle me up like that. And the other incident that I had, it took me a year to even be able to talk about it. Basically, I was out on the patio. And at the time, I was living in this apartment complex. And I was writing for their newsletter. And it was about to be Earth Hour. And I was so excited because we were just on the edge of town. And I was thinking, oh my gosh, if we participate, it'll really help the light pollution. And maybe we could do a stargazing party during that hour. So that's where my head was. Well, all of a sudden, out of the corner of my eye, down below, I see this really big cloud of smoke. And I'm thinking, wow, you know, this is back when... Like, I'm going to sound old and weird, but like, you know, people that they're vaping and they've got those monstrous clouds of smoke. And I'm just like, oh, my gosh, that's a lot. And I'm looking for the person that did this, but there's no person. And all of a sudden, this cloud takes form of this humanoid looking thing. I mean, it walked like we do, you know, two legs and feet and two arms. And it had this head that, you know, with these big eyes, it'd be like a gray alien type of a look to it. And I watched it walking down the road. And as I'm watching it, I'm frozen because, of course, I don't have fight or flight. I have freeze. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, it just manifested out of nowhere. Could it also be psychic? And if it's psychic, then you cannot let it know that you're watching it. Because if it could just come there, then it could just appear on the deck with me. So I'm trying really hard to clear my mind, and I'm barely breathing, and I'm just staring. And then finally, it's like it just disappears out of an invisible door. It's just gone. So I stand there and I try really hard. I'm like, okay, you can turn around and you have to get into your house. And so I do, and I shut the sliding glass door and I call my sister, and I'm hysterical. I'm sobbing, and she's trying to get me to calm down to explain what just happened. So I get the curtain shut and I have her on speakerphone. And then I realize that my kid's window is wide open. and the blinds are up. So I was like, I have to go in there. And so I go in there and I'm trying really hard not to act like anything's wrong, you know, because you don't want to scare them. And I go in there and I have, so my left hand has the phone and my right hand, I'm holding the, you know, the strings for the blinds, you know, you pull it down and you let go and they would, you know, fall. So I already have my phone. It's on, you know, it's open, hand on the string, and I can feel like I'm being stared at. And I told my sister, I was like, I feel something staring at me. And I look up and I look into the window of the unit that is across from mine. And I can see the exact same shape, the exact everything. And it's right there. And I tell her, I'm like, I think I see it. And she's like, take a picture for me if you can. Well, it wasn't too hard. It was like, you know, one button and I already had my phone open. So I was like, okay. And I raised my phone up and I took the picture and then boom, I released the blinds. And so that's the picture I sent you. And it took me, you know, a good year to talk about it. I sent the original picture to my sister. I deleted it off my phone. I told her to keep it for me in case I ever actually wanted to speak about it, because my fear was, is there still that energetic connection to it through the photo? Could it connect it with me? And that's why I didn't want to talk about it. But I haven't run into it since. I've had no problems since then. But situations like that where it's so real, it's so in your face, it's jarring.
Yeah, it is. And so you absolutely have had a lot of experiences. Now, you had mentioned something about speaking at a UFO event. You are familiar with the UFO community.
Well, so right now I am in the baby steps of looking into the UFO community, going to the UFO conferences. It is something that is an interest of mine, but it has taken me a long time to get to this point because, again, going back, my father is ex-military. I still do not know what he did when he was there. Anytime I try to ask, I played baseball and I swam with the jellyfish. It's like, okay, Dad, but what did you really do? Well, when I was really little, I remember asking him, I said, well, how can you tell a UFO from an airplane? And he said, well, it's really simple. And he showed me. You know, well, this is a satellite. This is what a shooting star would look like. And this is what a UFO would look like. And I remember seeing all kinds of different UFOs in the sky space over my house growing up. Well, then I remember asking him, I said, well, are there good aliens and are there bad aliens? And he said, well, of course there are. Just like there's good people and bad people. But he said it so matter-of-factly, you knew it wasn't a joke because he said it just like that. And that always stayed with me. Well, then as I got older and I wanted to research this subject, I would try to talk with my friends about it. And, you know, back then I had the landline phone and I remember hearing it was like somebody was on the phone. And if I got into that subject too heavily, our phone line would get cut off. You could not, there was no dial tone at all. You couldn't use the phone. So over time, I felt like I wasn't supposed to talk about it. And earlier this year, when I had decided, I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to be brave and I'm going to finally, you know, search through this stuff because I've had other experiences that are abduction alien related. And as soon as I had made that decision, every electronic in my house stopped working for an hour. And then everything started to work again. And then a couple days later, I had 2 hours of missing time. So I have to be, I feel, I have to be very careful when proceeding in this subject.
Okay. So do you feel like you were abducted?
When I was pregnant with my first child, and I remember my ex-husband and I, we'd gotten into a fight, and he drove off, and he was, you know, he wasn't gone for too long. And I get this call from him. He's hysterical. He's talking about this bright light that he saw in the sky, and but there was no sound, but it was really bright. And so he races home and he's telling me about it. Well, later on that, it was that night, he woke up and he had this weird labored breathing. And he noticed that as I was asleep, that I was also having the same labored breathing. Well, soon it passed and he was able to go back to sleep. And I guess I was fine. And then, you know, the next morning he wakes up, no big deal. Well, that night, the longest time I thought it was just a dream. I was on this table bed thing, and
so that's all the time we have for tonight, folks. Tune in next week as myself and Anne Celine continue our discussion about Bigfoot, abductions, ghosts, and pretty much everything that she has experienced. So thank you for your time, and I'll see you next week, folks. Good night.